carries in, scores! Patrick Laine snaps it. What a goal by Laine.
Gotta throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting, it's off of Hellebuck. Rebound, it's out of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Shoots and scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by, highlight. Stand by, host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Smile, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manouk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to get you completely set up for the Jets' shot at redemption as they are into Calgary tonight to meet the Flames. It's a 9 o'clock puck drop. You can hear the game live, of course, on this fine radio station, TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, joined in studio by my colleague, Dave Manouk. Ezra Ginsberg away from the show today. He's on the DL. Hopefully it's only a short-term stint on the DL. We wish Ezzy well. See, that rhymed. DL, well.
Yeah.
That's it. That's pretty much the end of the rhyming for this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us your text messages. We have texting capabilities now. 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. That's how also you can reach us in studio if you're not on Twitter. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's available at illegalcurve.com. We start on this Saturday morning by looking back to what was a disappointing, I think, to put it mildly, home opener on Wednesday night. The Toronto Maple Leafs come into town, built as a matchup between, of course, Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, built, you know, as a battle between two teams that have playoff aspirations. And certainly, David, the Toronto Maple Leafs emphasized their playoff aspirations. They emphasized what some people are calling them as a dark horse Stanley Cup contender by embarrassing the Winnipeg Jets on home ice by a 7-2 margin.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. The Jets got off to a great start. They got lucky with the first three power play opportunities. I thought that the, you know, especially with the Komarov penalty, which was that, you know, the equipment violation, kind of caught all of us upstairs.
The visor helmet thing.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I'd read a report from a guy who, you know, Carter Brooks is a guy up in the press box, and he had mentioned the day before that Komarov has to be aware of that because of the way he wears his visor.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, you'd think someone would have advised him that, you know, of this change. And of course he didn't.
Well, you know, let me just stop you right there. It was a subject matter throughout the preseason in that he was constantly warned. You saw in the game, I don't know if you could see it on the replay on the game broadcast, that the referees did warn him prior to giving him the penalty. But the most bizarre part about that is that he doesn't actually have to wear a visor. He's one of those players who are grandfathered in that they don't need to wear the visor, yet he wants to wear it for protection, which I understand, but he wears it so poorly that it ended up costing them a 2-minute minor penalty.
And let's be realistic. The difference in that first period, especially in the first 15 minutes, was Anderson. Frederik Anderson was unbelievable, and he played like a number one goalie for the Leafs. Like he was the difference in the game. I mean, the Jets' power play, people were maligning it somewhat because it didn't, of course, score at the same rate that it was doing in preseason, which, as you know, the coaching staff indicated wasn't likely to continue when you're at like a 50% rate or something like that. So that was not unexpected, but I thought the looks they were getting on the power play was very good and the opportunities they were getting on the power play was very good. But Anderson was just the difference, and he held them in the game, and he did exactly kind of what you anticipated someone was going to do, which was what ended up happening, right? The Leafs get an opportunity the other way. And despite the fact that the Jets have kind of controlled play at that point, you know, the Leafs turn it on, and the Leafs have a tremendous amount of talent and depth. And sure enough, you saw it with the, you know, you saw it with the Kadri goal. You saw it with, you know, the Matthews and Marleau connection. I mean, the Leafs were just very good once that kind of, they kind of held the fort. through Anderson, and then as a result, their talent took over, and they started to outplay the Jets.
It took them about 14 minutes. I mean, the first 12 to 14 minutes of the game, it was a complete and total onslaught, like you were saying. And the Jets' power play, while it didn't strike, it wasn't successful. The zone time was impressive, and the control of the play was impressive, but they weren't able to get it past Frederick Anderson. Is he, certainly... showed, like you said, Dave, his bona fides as a number one goaltender. And then what happens? The Leafs get their first opportunity when Jacob Trouba takes that hooking penalty in the first period, and they score. And you could just see the Jets deflate. And, it's the adversity question that has been a subject matter for, years on years at this point in time, where the Jets get, punched in the face, because they're feeling great about themselves. They've controlled the play. They can't quite get that first goal, but, everything's going well. And then the Leafs come back. They get that power play opportunity, get that power play goal. You can, get punched in the nose. And what happens to the Jets? Do they respond? Do they fight back? Do they say, no, not tonight? No, they really, rolled over with the two straight goals very shortly thereafter. Van Riemsdyk and Nylander get two within 43 seconds, and boom, it's 3-0 Leafs before the first period's over.
Yeah, and unlike the last time when the Leafs took the, in last year when the Leafs took that early lead and the Jets came back, it just didn't feel like that was going to happen. Like,
right.
This game just never felt, and the Jets had opportunities. I mean, the Jets had, I think, of the first seven penalties, the Jets had six power plays.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a lot of opportunity. Even in the second period, they had two within, I think, the first 10 minutes.
10.5
minutes,
yeah.
10.5 minutes. So, that's an opportunity to get back in the game, crawl back in. And, again, I thought some of the things they did were working, in terms of, the power play. And you run into a hot goaltender. It happens. It's not like it's not a shocking thing that a goalie keeps his team in the game and is the best player on the ice. I mean, let's put it this way. We were picking three stars, and that was the easiest three stars we ever had to pick because – I mean, Anderson could have been all three stars the way he played for his team, the difference he made.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jets just didn't seem to have an answer. And the Jets' defense, in certain regard, like all the things the Jets talked about improving, whether it was like the casualness of the defense and, playing the proper structure within their structure, whatever that means, it just didn't seem like they were doing what they've talked about throughout the preseason. And personally, I think that's a function of if you look at the way this team played those last couple of preseason games, they played primarily with lines that weren't going to be in their primary lineup. And it's interesting because you would think that a coaching staff would have chosen to use their young, unproven players, the AHL guys or the prospects,
early
in the preseason. I mean, I understand the idea of getting your guys a game early,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand how does that sustain them till the regular season, as opposed to playing your more regular lineup in the last couple of games, I think was at Ottawa and Calgary.
Yeah.
And then you say to yourself, okay, we've got these guys battle tested, even if they were preseason games, and you're also less likely to have those guys up against prospects who, they talked about it, who are just trying to make a big hit to show that they can play in the NHL. And then these guys are a little bit more ready. I'm not saying they weren't ready for the game, but it seemed chaotic.
The bad habits that they've talked so much in the preseason about getting rid of and in training camp and how it all starts on the defensive side. They talked a good game for upwards of 3 weeks of a month during training camp, and boom, one period and you're back to square one.
Yeah, and the truth is, again, if you look at the advanced stats, they just show that the most important period the Leafs controlled, which was the second period. The third period, the Jets controlled, but that's fine because they're playing from behind.
Score effects at that
exactly.
point in time.
So, but the first period was relatively easy, even in terms of the Corsi and the Fenwick. But then if you actually look at the second period, I think the Leafs almost had a 60%, which means, that means they're controlling the play. And the fact of the matter is, even if they're not, when you're down 3-0, you need to be in control of the puck. You need to be in possession. That's as simple as it gets. And directing pucks on net. And the reality was that it just wasn't happening. And the Leafs really seemed to control it, despite the fact that, like I said, the Jets had the early power plays. I mean, because I think even in the first period, the shots were
17-10.
Yeah, but I mean, early on, I think it was 15-3 or something
yeah.
like that.
The first 10-12 minutes of the game, the Jets were absolutely, they were peppering Frederick Anderson. And if it wasn't for him making They weren't spectacular saves. I don't recall any spectacular saves, but I think I remember
the Sean Mathias. I think he made a breakaway
maybe a
on
Brian
Mathias.
Little one or the Sean Mathias one. Yeah, but you know they were solid saves. They were a good goaltender making good saves.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Jets, when they need that crucial save, and I'm not putting it all on Steve Mason, but he certainly didn't, you know, give you a lot of confidence in his performance. Not that anybody on the Jets side in the defensive zone gave you a lot of confidence in their performance.
Yeah, I mean, Mason was – well, you know, early on, I actually thought Mason made some nice saves, you know. And I think – was it the third goal where – when Andrew Kopp got pushed into Mason and knocked him out of play. It was either the first or third goal. I don't remember. And essentially just took him out and then –
well, that was that would have been Kadri's power play goal.
Yeah, Kadri's goal. And then, and then Kadri just put it up and over him.
Yeah.
But I thought early on, actually, he made some critical saves and he looked okay. And I thought, okay, well, that's pretty good and that's obviously what you need. And then sure enough – the dam kind of broke, and, you know, next thing you know, it's five goals against Mason, and then, you know, Connor Hellebuck's coming in, sure enough, and that makes sense if you're, you know, the coach, because what are you going to do? You're going to leave your goalie in to get exposed like that?
Yeah,
I mean, you don't want to pull your goalie on the opening night. He's a brand-new goalie in his first game, regular season game, and he gets pulled. It's never a good thing.
And a guy who's, I think it's safe to say with Steve Mason, has struggled maybe with confidence in the course of over the years, you know, as a goaltender, be it in Columbus where we know we had the downturn, and then in his latter years in Philadelphia, things weren't going fantastically there. You know, I know I've heard the argument it's only one of 82, and there's no point in panicking about the results of one of 82. But do you understand why people are apoplectic about the result on Wednesday night? Do you understand why people see it as more than just one of 82? They see it as a continuation of what we've seen from the Winnipeg Jets under Paul Maurice for much of the last 2 years into year three. The same, even going back to the Claude Noel era, the same problems, the same issues, and that they have not been able to get out of their system. Now, if it's one game in mid-February, I think you understand that. You know, if you played well for 45, 50 games and then you have an off night, I think people can live with that. But it's when it's the first game of the year and you've talked a big game all off season about how this is our season, playoffs are a must, defense first, responsibility first, and then that gets absolutely blown out of the water immediately, you know, 15, 17, 18 minutes into the game. Do you understand why people are apoplectic about the result?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you think about it, what has this team preached? What have we heard? You know, I mean, I listen to every audio or if I'm there or if I, you know,
they've been preaching defense.
Right, team defense, and essentially saying that if you want to win as a team, you know, Coach Maurice ended his scrum yesterday. The comment was very interesting. And essentially said, or it was the other day, and he basically said, like, we as a team are not moving forward. We as a team cannot win if we do not have the right practice techniques and we don't have the right – we're not playing defense properly. And so I'm trying to pull it up right now if I can. Let's see if I can get the exact quote from him. It was, we'll deal with this every day all year because this franchise doesn't move forward until it can defend. You can put all the talent in the world on the ice and you're not winning a damn thing until you get a really good comfort level to defend. Now, that's a very good statement. And Paul Maurice is good at statements, and he's a very smooth guy. But the reality is that you have to be able to put the structure in place for your team and the personnel in place to ensure that you're going to be able to have that defense mind, you know, kind of defend first mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, again, the players talk about it. You know, every player to a man, Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolaj Ehlers, all these guys talked about it. It's not a function of talking. It's a function of, as you just said, Drew, it's a function of proving that you can actually take what you've talked about and put it into action, put the proper action. Now, we didn't see that. We saw a lot of breakdowns in defensive coverage. I mean, if you think about that third goal, which was just a tap in for, was it William Nylander?
Yeah.
When you know, it was on the delayed penalty against
That's
Dustin
right.
Byfuglien, and Nylander just tapped it into the empty net because nobody was watching him.
Yeah.
And he was just wide open. I don't even know if they had the sixth guy get on yet at that point, because the Jets were kind of standing around and broke down. And then, like I said, he had a free play. Everybody was looking on the left side of the ice, and Nylander was on the right side and just tapped it in on after a nice pass by Jake Gardiner. But, you know, again, I think it goes back to it's easy to talk about on the radio. It's easy to talk about in interviews. But you have to talk about the structure. And you know, and I think the reason why, to be honest with you, I think the reason why a big segment of the fan base was upset was because they saw the personnel decisions. And they were wondering, you know, why is a player like Nick Petan, who actually had a really nice preseason, why is he not in your lineup? And I know they're talking about penalty kill and whatnot, but like, you know, in this league, we saw with Toronto, I mean, their top nine is probably as good as any top nine in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And that's what you need in this league. You need a top nine. You can't talk in top six anymore. I don't understand why we still use that frame of reference. It really needs to be it's a top nine with a fourth line that you're checking shut down. And they just could do that. But it doesn't seem like they're doing that. And from what I'm reading from fans, that seems to be the biggest concern with the coaching staff is the fact that they're not icing perhaps the most optimal lineup that they could.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll come back and we'll talk more about the lines and we'll get you set for tonight against the Calgary Flames as the Jets and the Flames will do battle, both looking for wins after both lost on opening night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday. We're live on TSN 1290.
Dustin Byfuglien able to open up the score. Here he has his sixth on the season.
20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Jets and Flames, as I mentioned, they do battle tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop, second half of the doubleheader of Saturday Night Hockey, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Of course, our coverage begins earlier on in the evening as we will get you ready for the Jets and the Flames having lost on Wednesday night as well to the Connor McDavids, 3-0, the Flames got shut out, they head back home to the aging Calgary Saddledome for, I guess it's Scotiabank Saddledome, whatever the hell it is, for their home opener between the Jets and the Flames. You mentioned, Dave, you're talking about the lines and the acknowledgement. It seems like the acknowledgement throughout the NHL that you need three scoring lines and then a fourth line that is a checking line. Well, for the opening game, Paul Maurice decided to go in a different approach. You mentioned Nick Petan was the healthy scratch in the opening game, and guys, you know, like Brandon Tanev got to see ice time in the first game. Here are the lines based on Jets practice yesterday, so the blender is already out after, you know, one game. Instead, you know, it started with Perreault and Scheifele and Wheeler. That was how it was on Wednesday. Ehlers is back up there, so the line that Ezzy and maybe other people, hopefully not, have dubbed the Schwieler's line.
It's a terrible name.
Terrible name. Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler, that's back together. You're looking at a second line of Matthew Perreault on the left, Brian Little, and Patrick Laine. Your third line, this is where you start to see some of the changes. Sean Matthias, Adam Lowry, Nick Petan getting an opportunity on the third line after being that healthy scratch. And then your fourth line of Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp, and Joel Armia. By the sounds of it, Marco Dano is going to be your healthy scratch, assuming everything is the same as it was at practice yesterday. We won't know. Jets game day skate won't happen until
12:30
Central Time?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's the late start in Calgary.
Yeah.
So, the Jets game day skate won't happen until we're off the air, but the Hustler and Rick and Kevin O will have all that information. We'll have confirmation, and it'll be, of course, on illegalcurve.com. Defense, that blender went as well. Josh Morrissey with Dustin Byfuglien. It was Enstrom and Byfuglien on Wednesday. Morrissey and Byfuglien now. Kulikov with Trouba and Enstrom and Myers back together. Sherratt and Poolman, of course, as the probably the extras on the defense. No, wouldn't expect either of those two guys to get into the lineup. They're getting closer to having a better lineup with, you know, Nick Petan at least getting into it. I know there's a lot of Jets fans who would still like to see, would prefer to see Kyle Connor up with the big team. Count me as one of them, as opposed to Brandon Tanev. But, you know, your if you're getting to a checking line of Tanev, Kopp, and Armia on your fourth line, and they're playing fourth line minutes, and they're in a sort of a very specific role, it's a little bit better than having the sort of bottom six of being a graveyard of goals as it was, you know, really it was on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, look, Nick Petan has very good talent, and again, I thought he showed pretty well in the preseason. He showed that he didn't, you know, need to be sent to the Moose, but my advocate, what I've been an advocate of is if Nick Petan is going to be up with the club, then you have to play him. You can't sit him in the press box. It's just a complete waste of talent, and it's a waste of development. And I understand that he gets practice in the NHL, but the reality is if he's not playing games, then he's got to be in the AHL. And it's the same for Kyle Connor. And don't get me wrong, I actually didn't think Kyle Connor had a particularly strong preseason. I didn't have a problem with him being sent to the AHL because the fact is that, you know, he had a phenomenal AHL. Like, I watched every game last year, and his last 30 games, I should say, were really good. Once he kind of accepted the mindset that he was down in the minors and needed to show something there, he was very good, and his speed was good and was evident. But Kyle Connor, to me, still has to go to those dirty areas, and he still has to. He can't do the things that were successful simply in college and simply in the AHL. He's got to take it to that next level. You're in the NHL; it's the greatest hockey league in the world, and you know a lot of players there have skill. So it's not a function of skill.
Like, let me ask you this question. Sorry for interrupting.
That's fine.
You like you said, you watched Kyle Connor last year,
mm-hmm.
and that he can. There's things he can get away with in the college level,
yep.
and things he can get away with at the AHL level that he can't get away with at the NHL level. And we saw that exemplified in one of the preseason games, the game against the Ottawa Senators, that Wednesday night a couple weeks ago, where he had the turnover mm-hmm. at center ice. It went the other way, and I think it ended up, if I recall correctly, into a Senators goal.
Yep, it did.
And that's the kind of move where, you know, you can't be playing with the puck and the last man back and turn it over because it ends up in the back of your net inevitably. And then in the same game, he made a couple dipsy doodles that didn't result in a goal, but he showed off that skill set that makes him so dynamic going through a couple different defenders. How much more, having watched Kyle Connor, you know, at the AHL level all last year,
mm-hmm.
how much more is there for him to learn at the AHL level before he just needs to put it into practice and learn on the job at the NHL level?
Well, I mean, I guess it really depends on your perspective, because from what the coaching staff has indicated here, the idea being that you have to take a player and move him into the position that will make him successful and what he was playing in the AHL. Meaning, if Kyle Connor is your first line, you know, winger in the AHL, he's obviously not going to come in and become your first line winger in the NHL. But the idea being, he's not going to come in and be a fourth line winger in the NHL. Same with Jack Roslovic. He's not coming in and being your fourth line center. That's not the end goal. So from a development perspective, you have to take more of a long-term view of these things and these types of players. Now, Kyle Connor, could he come in and play for the Jets? Yeah, but again, Drew, you just touched on it. He has to do things that he's not doing right now, and we didn't see them in the preseason. He has to be more than a perimeter player. He has to be a player who's willing to go, take a hit, get into that dirty zone, and you know, then you can show off the things that you do, because the fact is his speed is phenomenal. His shot is great. He's got a really good offensive mindset. There's no question about it. And is in fact, at the AHL level, what we saw, which we didn't see, for example, in that Ottawa game, he made a similar play last year on the power play, and the puck turned over to the blue line. It could have been a clear breakaway for the other team, and he used his speed to get back and nullify the play. In this instance, he didn't do that, right? He lost it, and like you just said, it turned into a goal.
NHL opposition versus AHL opposition.
Yeah, and again, don't get me wrong. I'm a big Kyle Connor fan. I think his talent is really good. But again, I don't want to harp on it, but it's just, to me, it's a function of being able to do those things that you need to do, which is go into those dirty areas.
Well, that's my point, though, is that I think at a point in time, you have to give him the opportunity to learn in good situations at the NHL level. Meaning, you're right, he's not going to come in and be your first-line center. I don't think that would be fair to him, because he'd be going up against probably top defensemen as his competition. But if you can bring him in on your third line and ease him into situations where, you know, he's playing against second-pairing defensemen, third-pairing defensemen, and he can learn a little bit. There is an element. There has to be an element of on-the-job training.
Well, you know, look, just looking at the lines from yesterday, if you're going to tell me that you could have Kyle Connor playing with Nick Pétain, I would be like, okay, let's, you know, do that. Because at the end, you're going to have a guy who facilitates like Pétain, who has great vision and can get guys the puck. And then you've got Kyle Condor, who has just a lethal release. And you might, like you said, Drew, if you're going up against lesser defense, you're not going up against a top pairing defense, that could be a recipe for success for Kyle Connor. So again, I'm not saying that Kyle Connor, I guess it becomes a question of what do you view him as? Do you view him as a guy who's going to come in and be a top winger? And if so, who of Wheeler, Ehlers, Laine, and Perreault? Now, the reality is, I mean, right now, his ceiling is obviously higher than what Perreault can generate eventually, but right now is Kyle Connor going to kind of knock Matthew Perreault, because that's really the only winger that you can knock out of that top, you know, top six.
But I'd personally, and we talked about this on Tuesday's NHL This Week show a lot, I would like to see a third scoring line with Pétain and with Connor and with, you know, Lowry up the middle or whomever's going to play center there, or if whatever they choose to do, if they choose to put Matthias at center and have Pétain and Connor flanking him on the wings, and then Lowry goes down to your fourth line. I want to see skill with skill, because I don't know that Nick Pétain, the skill that he has, is best suited playing with Adam Lowry and Sean Matthias. Now, Sean Matthias has scored at the NHL level, but you wouldn't look at him and say he's a naturally gifted goal scorer. He gets his goals in, you know, by going to the dirty areas and doing the little things necessary to get a goal. He's not going to generate a goal all on his own generally.
No.
So I wouldn't mind seeing Pétain and Connor, two guys who are tremendously skilled, playing off one another. I don't know that Pétain right now has the player he can play off with on that line with Matthias and Lowry.
No, I don't disagree. In fact, I actually thought Matthias, Lowry, and Armia would be your ideal fourth line checking line, personally.
I would be good with that.
I look at that and I think to myself, okay, well, there's your fourth line.
That and then can you also score a little bit.
No, but that, and exactly. That's the whole point. They're not just there to kill time. And then you could, in theory, do a Connor, Pétain, Kopp third line, which gives you some scoring and potentially a little bit of defense. I don't know how much defense it would give you, but the idea being that there you go, there's a top nine that you could roll out that would give you the opportunity to score with those top three lines.
Almost you'd have an opportunity to score with those four lines. I mean, Joel Armia almost had double digits in goals last year, if I recall correctly. Adam Lowry did, mm-hmm. albeit with power play time. Sean Matthias has scored double digits in the NHL. If that's your fourth line, sign me up, because I've seen, you know, I've seen enough of, you know, and I don't want to pick on the kid, but I've seen enough of Brandon Tanev to know that he's not going to be able to do anything on the offensive side of the game whatsoever that warrants him getting significant ice time game in and game out.
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, if you're going in a particularly aggressive game where you think you're going to need penalty killing, I guess, in theory, but I mean, if you look at the stats, advanced stats, his penalty killing numbers aren't exactly anything to write home about. So, I mean, again, I'd be interesting to know the metrics that they're using, simply because they don't seem to be borne out by
anything we've seen.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do today and moving forward.
When we come back, we head out to Calgary. Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald is going to join us, talk about the Flames and the Jets from the Calgary perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
From the Calgary Herald, we are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Kristen Odland. Kristen, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem. I can't believe the season started already. It felt like a long summer.
Well, you know, we had you on about, oh gosh, maybe 6 weeks ago to talk about the arena debate in Calgary, and I've got to say I'm quite happy that we're talking about on-ice action and, you know, the start of the regular season and the Flames home opener tonight rather than another arena saga that usually gets us through the long summer months of hockey content.
Well, and that's the thing. It's, the fact that Jaromír Jágr has been kind of taking all the headlines this week is a certainly a nice distraction, I think, for the fans and for obviously all the media personnel, but the team personnel as well. I mean, having that as a hockey distraction, I think, it comes at a really good time for the team.
Kristen, before we talk about the Jets and the Flames tonight, you were in Edmonton on Wednesday night to watch the Connor McDavids. Just, you know, from your perspective, having seen him live and up close and personal, that goal, I mean, obviously he had the hat trick, but the goal where he blows by NHL caliber defenseman at 45 kilometers an hour, I think it's what he eventually was tracked at speed wise. What was that like? Just, you know, what was the reaction in the press box? Because, you know, we've certainly been in our share of press boxes and they tend to be a bit of a cynical place. But, you know, what was the reaction there to watch that live and in person?
Yeah, that was absolutely ridiculous. Like his first step is so powerful and it's been well documented, and his speed has been obviously clocked, and his off-season regime is, you know, second to none. It is the example of all NHLers, I think, in the league. But to see it in action, to see it live, like to see how that translates to on ice, like it's just ridiculous. So the second goal you're talking about was when he blew by TJ Brody in the neutral zone. And I think somebody said to me at the time, like, they didn't even think, they were like, oh, well, TJ Brody's foot speed, like something about that. And I just looked at them. I was like, that's nobody's stopped that. Nobody's going to catch that. So it was amazing. And you know, like being in Edmonton, and then obviously the Calgary-Edmonton rivalry, like Calgary just is, Edmonton is so lucky that they have him. And you know, to see him on a nightly basis, I think is such a treat. The reaction in the press box is one thing, but the reaction post game was something else to hear. Mark Giordano talk about it. He's the best player in the world. Glenn Gulson obviously wasn't too happy about the loss, and he, you know, couldn't stop raving about him. And then hearing Jaromír Jágr Thursday, in his first practice with the Flames, and everybody was asking him about Connor McDavid. I think, like, you know, have that guy say as the words that he did about Connor McDavid. I mean, he's just amazing, I think.
Kristen Odland, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Calgary Flames, the Jets and the Flames tonight in Calgary as the Flames home opener. Kristen, you mentioned Jaromír Jágr, and of course he was the big signing over this past week. He comes and joins the Flames. You know, he's only been in the dressing room for a very short period of time so far. What have you noticed about his influence already in the dressing room, or is it just too soon to really see how the players respond to really a living legend being in their presence?
You know, it's been immediate. I didn't know what to expect when, you know, he was signed. I kind of thought, oh, I don't know how this is going to go over in the dressing room, just because I thought that they were building kind of from the ground up. I didn't think that he could really add a whole lot. But, man, just watching him the last 2 days at practice, just his presence, the way he communicates with the players, the way that he, his vibe, like the general vibe that he brings. I mean, he's such an enigmatic kind of guy. Like I was watching him yesterday talking with Sam Bennett and talking with Christopher Stieg and kind of telling them where he's going to be and why. And he's always talking and always like plotting out where he's going to be, and it's really been interesting. I think I didn't really know. I mean, I saw a lot of him over the last few years, obviously, but I didn't really know the impact that he would have in the dressing room. But so far, it's been quite amazing. And I mean, it's their home opener tonight. But man, if he plays, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to, like, he's playing on the top power play and the second unit, like just to get some looks. So I'm not sure where he will end up, if he's on the first or second unit power play. To see him already factoring in a big part of this roster is kind of interesting too. So the Flames really think highly of him, and every single player that I've talked to just lights up when they talk about him. So it's like a kid, like they're all like kids playing with their idol, and they are. I mean, Matthew Tkachuk, his dad was drafted like only a few picks after Jaromir Jagr in the 1990 NHL draft. So, I mean, to have a guy like that, it's like playing for – I was talking to Sam Bennett. I was actually talking to Sam Bennett's dad yesterday, and he was like, yeah, Sam said it's like playing with you, Dad. It's you know, but obviously he still can bring it. So it's Mark Giordano said yesterday that he was walking around with his weight vest on already, so it's not just a myth. So it's you know, I'm kind of looking forward to see if he plays tonight for sure.
Kristen, you recently conducted a one-on-one Q&A with Flame center Sean Monahan for the Herald. What impresses you most about the fifth-year pro?
It's been really interesting to watch his progression as a you know, obviously as a person, but as a player in this league. Like, when he first came, he was a serious guy, and obviously we knew the skill and knew the potential, and the Flames had such a bad year the first year that he was here with the Flames, and you know, to see him kind of evolve into this leader, into this voice of reason in the dressing room has been really neat. And so of course, like, everything is about his boring Monahan account. Everyone thinks he's like a super uninteresting kind of monotone guy, and he was even saying, I was asking him about it, I was like, so does that bother you that people think that? And he's like, well, my voice is monotone. He's like, but I'm not, I have a personality.
Yeah.
So it's but he hasn't really been able to let that show, I think, in the past few years. He hasn't, you know, it takes some time for guys to get comfortable, of course, and I think you're just really seeing a mature Sean Monahan, and he's turning in to be one of the top centers, if not like a part of, he's going to be part of the top centerman conversation in the league. You know, for years we were asking him, oh, you know, what is it like to face Kessler? What is it like to face Kopitar on a nightly basis? Because he is the Flames' top centerman. And now I think this could be a year where he takes a step and is, you know, involved in that conversation with those guys.
Kristen Odlund, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Calgary Flames. Of course, the Jets and the Flames do battle in the Flames home opener later on tonight. Kristen, the Jets and the Flames are sort of similar in that they both, you know, imported a goaltender from a previous team to try and shore up an area that has been a concern for both teams. Obviously, less of a concern in Calgary, as they had Brian Elliott last year, and after some opening, you know, early season struggles, he did a fine job and got the Flames to the playoffs. But Mike Smith is now the starting goaltender in Calgary. You know, obviously it's only one game, so you can't really say how did he look in Edmonton, but how has he fit into the Flames dressing room, and what are expectations of Mike Smith as we begin this 17-18 campaign?
Yeah, no different than Mason. I think you're bang on when you made the assessment that they're quite a similar team in that respect. With just in terms of bringing in a goaltender, like, and a lot is riding on their, I mean, they're expecting Mike Smith to start the lion's share of games in Calgary. So, to me, the biggest thing with Mike Smith is his experience. I mean, he's 35 years old. Everyone has been ragging on him all summer about his age. I mean, not like, you know, to his face, obviously just on Twitter and the scuttlebutt in Calgary. You know, every time you go out somewhere, you know, people don't understand why Brad Treliving would want to sign a guy like that. But man, he's a battler, and he is in such good shape. He is just like, I was just astonished when I, you know, saw him, and he's a big guy, tall guy. He's active. He's athletic. We were talking to him yesterday, kind of off the record, and he's saying that, like, he used to play the puck all the time in Arizona, just cause, right? Like, I mean, obviously with their defense and being so inexperienced, he was trying to move things forward and move the play forward. But, with Calgary, it's a bit of a different scenario with their experienced defenseman, Mark Giordano, Dougie Hamilton, and puck moving defensemen too. So it's been a little bit of it's going to be an interesting chemistry, I think, you're going to see develop between Mike Smith and the defense in front of him. In terms of expectations, in terms of how he's fit in already, well, he stopped 44 shots or 42 shots on Wednesday night in Edmonton. And Glenn Gallant said yesterday, yeah, like, we heard that Smitty, you know, faced a lot of shots in Arizona, so we wanted to introduce him to that a bit in Calgary. He was totally joking, but it was funny to, you know, hear Glenn Gallant to, like, totally address the elephant in the room. But it's he's a competitor. He's a fiery guy. And, you know, maybe in some ways the Flames lacked that a little bit last year. They didn't have, like, a guy that was a real that wanted to win. Like, Brian Elliott is a competitive guy and wants to win too, but I just think it was such a strange year for him off the bat. And it just didn't really work out in Calgary for him. And Chad Johnson, you know, played admirably when he was called upon, but it just didn't, just wasn't. And then in the playoffs, Brian Elliott kind of faltered. So Mike Smith it's going to be interesting to see the way that I think the way that he develops chemistry with the defense, but also is he able to, you know, keep up that pace throughout the season. And the Flames obviously have Eddie Lack as a backup, and he's slowly regaining his confidence. You're seeing it kind of day-to-day thing. Some people say he's not an NHL goalie, or he's like, he is or he isn't, and there's kind of a debate out there. Well, we haven't really seen him mature in the NHL, and he hasn't really been given the true chance. So, I'm going to be interested to see when Eddie Lack goes in, but I'm also really excited to see the progression of Mike Smith, to see where it goes, just because of watching what happened to Brian Elliott and Chad Johnson last year. And this city has zero patience for goaltenders, like absolutely none anymore. I mean, there's been 10 goalies since Mika Kiprusoff, like 10 goalies since probably the best goaltender, apart from maybe Mike Vernon, but in maybe the modern day, you know, reincarnation of the Flames, it's been a long time since the Flames have had a high caliber goalie. So I'm not saying that Mike Smith is the answer to that, but I'm certainly interested to find out what he's able to do this season.
Kristen, Eddie Lack deserves credit just for the taco jersey he wore the other day.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually working on a story where hopefully I go for tacos with him. So you'll have to check online for that. We'll have a little bit of an in-depth interview.
Okay, well, we'll stay tuned for that. My question is about Mikael Backlund. You know, he finished fourth in Selke Trophy balloting last season, set a career high with 22 goals, 53 points. Do you think he can, it's a kind of a two-parter, can he surpass what he accomplished last year? And does his play get the recognition it deserves outside of Calgary?
No, I think you're right. It doesn't. And that's kind of an unfortunate thing. I mean, Mikael Backlund has kind of been through everything with this team and really built it. Like, he's really built his career from the ground up and really worked on his craft every single day. And last year, you're sort of seeing the fruits of that. It kind of all came into fruition for Mikael Backlund. His two-way play has been so under-recognized in the league. Actually, he finished fourth in Selke voting, so it's starting to get a little bit more well known about the type of goal, the type of centerman that Mikael Backlund is. He's playing on a line right now with Michael Frolik and Matthew Tkachuk, and they were probably the second. I would say they were the most consistent line for the Flames last year. I was going to say they're the second most consistent, but the top line had a hard time getting going. So Mikael Backlund's play he had a career year last year, and things are finally just kind of starting to fall into place for him, I think, as a centerman in this league. He believes he's a top end centerman in this league now. I think maybe, you know, you, as any player does, you kind of struggle with where you fit in a little bit, apart from the top, 5th percentile, of the players, but is he able to reach the heights that he did last year? It's quite possible. I think there's a good chance that he could equal or surpass what he did last year. But he had a phenomenal year last year. I mean, he was so consistent. His Corsi, everybody, all the Corsi, advanced stats aficionados really like him, and he's quite a well-rounded player in general. So I think you're right. I think that he is underappreciated and definitely could surpass or equal or surpass what he did last year for sure.
Kristen Odland covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. You can read her work post-game after the Jets and the Flames do battle tonight. Kristen, appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. We'll talk again soon. When we come back, we discuss Nikolaj Ehlers, his big contract extension, 7 years, $42 million. Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an Icy Saturday on TSN 1290.
Back for Wheeler. Shot for the touchdown, rebound, score! Nikolaj Ehlers is in the double digits.
Nikolaj Ehlers is a wealthy young man signing a 7-year, $42 million contract extension with the Winnipeg Jets that will take effect after this season, as he's still playing out his entry-level contract.
He's not so wealthy. He's only got $895,000
right,
for this
year. Right, but the rest of the contract is guaranteed. So he's guaranteed $42 million over the next 7 years. A nice little chunk of change for the 21-year-old Nikolaj Ehlers turns 22 on Valentine's Day. That's a happy Valentine's Day coming up in February. So a nice chunk of change for Nikolaj Ehlers. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, Dave Ehlers, this is his third year in the NHL, 38 points in his rookie season. Last year, destroying that total with 64 points in 82 games. He's currently he's got the third most points out of anybody that was drafted, second most points out of anyone that was drafted back in 2014, trailing only Leon Draisaitl of the Edmonton Oilers. 7 years, $42 million. It seems like a pretty good contract for the Winnipeg Jets to have signed with Nikolaj Ehlers, and that Ehlers, had he, you know, replicated the season that he had last year, probably left some money on the table.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's probably a good thing because Patrick Laine is going to take a big chunk of that change whenever they get him signed next year. But the truth is that Nikolaj Ehlers is a dynamic player. I mean, his control of the puck in the zone, getting it out of the zone, getting it into the offensive zone, facilitating the puck onto his teammates' sticks is very, very good. He's an extraordinarily effective winger. His defensive play obviously was what he really wanted to work on. He got a lot of praise on it from the coaching staff in the offseason because he clearly put a lot of work into that. And we've already seen him back on the top line now with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, and we saw what he was able to do with those guys last year, and that really does become one of your most, you know, the most dynamic scoring lines in the NHL in my mind with the talent of those three. I think it's a great deal. I really do. I think that the team hit a home run. I think Ehlers, no question, he probably left money on the table. You know, you heard his interview after signing the contract on the first day of the season. Mm-hmm. And clearly he was excited to get it done. And he said, you know, it didn't take a long time. He kind of came in with a number and he had a number in his head and the team had a number and they kind of got a deal done. So it really didn't sound like something that was going to draw itself out. And he said, you know, and he had some interesting quotes because, again, I kind of hate to belabor the point because you feel like in Winnipeg, it's almost like, oh, wow, someone actually wants to stay here. Now, I don't feel that way because, I love the city. But
clearly.
But there's a lot of people who, you know, from outside of Winnipeg who feel that there's that rationale, like you're not going to get players to
first
stick around.
First opportunity, they're going to be heading for the hills.
Or they're going to be asking for an exorbitant amount of money. Now, we don't see that here. And we see a player who literally said, from day one, I was happy here. Everybody helped me get settled from the start. It's amazing playing in front of all these fans. Winnipeg as a city is amazing. They love their hockey. I could not see any reason not to want to stay here for long term. Now, that's from his own lips. He didn't have to say it. He could have just said, you know, it was a good deal and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, he's been rather effusive of his praise of the city and the market and the team. And I think it really just is a testament to the fact that it's a very good fit. You got to give Larry Simmons a lot of credit, you know, the assistant general manager. Mm-hmm. Kevin Cheveldayoff did. A lot of times these assistant general managers who do a lot of the contract work kind of get left off
recognition. The
and it becomes a Chevy's a genius for getting this deal done. Kevin Cheveldayoff deserves credit because, you know, of course, ultimately he's the one who decides what that's going to look like and whether they're going to go forward with it. But at the same time, Larry Simmons, I think, deserves some credit because he probably negotiated with Ehlers and his agent and worked out what deal looked best from a Winnipeg perspective. And again, like I said, from my view, getting a player of this caliber to less money than Mark Scheifele, too, which is critical because – and I understand that – a previous contract isn't contingent on, you know, you're always looking at the next guy. So, you know, maybe Ehlers' camp wanted to look at Draisaitl and that sort of idea in terms of, you know, the contract. They're not looking backward. Generally, contracts, you look forward. So you're not going to look back at Mark Scheifele's deal, which, of course, as anyone who's looked at it would acknowledge, is a phenomenal deal from a Winnipeg perspective.
Sure.
So then you get Nikolaj Ehlers coming in at less money than the Jets essentially next captain, you know, an essential superstar, and a guy who had a lot more points than Ehlers, and plays probably a more critical role at center. The fact of the matter is, you got him in a little less. So there's not going to create that ego, that concern that a younger guy is making more money than Scheifele, and is there, you know, bad feeling about that? So. In my mind, I think it's a good contract from both perspectives.
I misspoke earlier. Ehlers has the third most points from the 2014 NHL entry draft. The only one with more is Leon Draisaitl, like I said, and David Pastrnak of the Boston Bruins, who has 124 points in 173 games played. Ehlers with 102 points in 155 games played, which takes me to Pastrnak, because he, of course, just signed the contract extension. He signed in Boston for 6 years and $40 million,
right.
So $6.66 million cap hit, which sort of gives you a frame of reference for Ehlers. What I'm sort of surprised about Ehlers is that he went all the way to the seven-year mark. I mean, I would have thought he might be more interested in the 4 or 5 year mark, because if he goes 4 years, he hits unrestricted free agency. This way, the Jets bought out 3 years of unrestricted free agency, which is more than I thought that he would necessarily be interested in selling to the Winnipeg Jets. You know, from the Jets' perspective, it really is a good contract, and I think the sky's the limit for Ehlers. If you look at his 64 points last year, what's most impressive about it is 52 of those 64 points, they came on the power play. Pardon me, they came even strength.
Five, yeah.
So this is a guy who's not just racking up points on the power play. He's doing most of his damage even strength, which tells you that as he's going to continue to get more power play opportunities and as his role is going to increase, that 64 point total might just be the tip of the iceberg. This is a guy who could probably easily get up into the 70 to 75 point range. A question actually to... You know, we're going to talk about that when we go through our Jets over-unders next hour. But this is a guy who certainly has the potential to be more than just a 60-point player. I think he's got potential to be a 70, 75-point player.
It's a sad testament to hockey, though, when that's an exciting number. You know, I mean, no, because, you know, if you think back to the days when 100 points was a no big deal and you know, guys generally hit that, and it was an afterthought because most people were looking at the guys who finished with 130 and 140. Although with Connor McDavid in the NHL, there's a good chance that we may be seeing the 120 and 125 range again. But no, I think you're absolutely right, Drew. I think he's a player who the sky is the limit. His trajectory is only going up, and that the team is going to be very lucky if they can keep him long-term, obviously Patrick Laine long-term, and see what that duo can do, because clearly they're very well connected. Mm-hmm. And clearly, again, this gives you some more leverage in terms of money, or not leverage, but in terms of availability of money for other contracts, because you do need to
Ehlers didn't break the bank, so you still have...
Well, you have a huge contract coming with Jacob Trouba, which, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff was asked about and kind of passed the buck, saying, oh, well, we've got to get Morrissey and Chevel and Trouba and whatnot. And the reality is there's a number of contracts that Jets still have to get done. Morrissey, Trouba, and Laine. Mm-hmm. Laine, they don't have to get done, but, you know, that's one that they're going to want to get done.
Yeah.
And so that's a big chunk of change.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to be joined by John Mattis of Post Media Network. Look around the NHL, talk about the opening week. Much more to come. Hour number two up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can send us your text messages in studio. 1290-90 standard messaging rates do apply. That's how to reach us here in studio. And of course, our website is illegalcurve.com. It's got the latest news and audio about your Winnipeg Jets.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media, we are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Mattis. John, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys, and happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise to you, John. John, obviously we brought you. I'm going to look around the entirety of the NHL with you, but we have to start with this past Wednesday night here in Winnipeg when the Leafs came in and really put a thumping on our hometown Winnipeg Jets. A tremendously impressive 7-2 victory. You know, did that victory sort of show the entire NHL that this Leafs team is to be considered a true Eastern Conference contender and thus maybe even a Stanley Cup contender?
Yeah, well, the expectations are sky high in Toronto, and I think that 7-2 opening win was beyond what anyone expected. So it's hard to really temper what's going on. But I think it sent a pretty strong message, and they're playing the Rangers tonight. So if they can string together another win there, another impressive win, then I guess that'll be a decent start to the season. But with the Wednesday game against Winnipeg, they, for the most part, or at least at the start of the game, they're getting outshot, outchanced. So it could have went either way. You know, the goaltending was really the difference in the first period there. And then I think the Leafs' forward depth just really showed. They had six different goal scorers, just Marleau getting the second one. And they just come at you in waves, and they have finishers, they have playmakers. It's quite the impressive forward group that they've assembled.
You know what? The Leafs traded for Winnipegger Calvin Picard and assigned him to the Marlies. How long do you think it will be before he how long do you think he'll be in the AHL before he is up with the big club and replaces Curtis McElhinney?
Well, I think, the Leafs, I think, acquired him for a reason. I think that's to be the backup. When that happens, I'm not sure. He's not going to back up tonight against New York, so Monday would be the first possible game, and I don't even know if it'll happen then, but they went out of their way to acquire him. They didn't really give up much, so it's not necessarily something that they were really striving for necessarily, or really putting a lot out there for. They basically traded an AHLer who doesn't have much of a chance to play in the NHL, at least in the Leafs organization, and a sixth-round pick. So, it's kind of a win-win situation for them. And Picard, I'm not sure why Vegas decided to part ways with him, aside from the fact that they seem to be really enjoying Malcolm Subban and picked him up and thought, okay, well, we can do away with Picard. But Picard could be a pretty solid backup. That's what he projects to be at the NHL level. So that's one of the issues, I guess you could say, one of the holes in the Leafs lineup is their backup goaltending. So if Picard turns out to be what he seems to be, then this seems like a solid pickup.
John Mattis of Post Media Network joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. John, moving away from the Leafs for a little bit, have we written the obituary of the Chicago Blackhawks maybe a little too quickly after that opening, that performance against the Pittsburgh Penguins with that 10-1 victory earlier this week?
Maybe. But at the same time, it's one game, so I try not to overreact. Same thing with the Leafs beating Winnipeg. I mean, is Steve Mason going to allow that many goals every night? No. Is that him at his worst? Maybe. With the Blackhawks, I think one thing that we, as a hockey community, and I'm painting with broad strokes here, I think we've downplayed the fact that Patrick Kane is, from, you could argue, a top five, definitely a top 10 player in the league. And I think we've just sort of counted the Blackhawks out for depth reasons, and we haven't really given them enough credit for having Crawford, for having Kane, and having Taves, who, you know, is probably not in the upper echelon of players anymore, but is still a high-quality NHLer. So, and then the Saad trade, at least in the first game, worked out well. He had a hat trick. So the Central Division is just so difficult to handicap because it's so deep that I would not be surprised if Chicago made the playoffs or didn't make the playoffs. They're sort of a bubble team, in my opinion.
You know, John, there is that talk now about top nine versus top six, and, you know, the Leafs' top nine, to me, is as deep as any in the league. How do you compare Toronto's top nine to any other team in the NHL?
Yeah, you know what? I was talking about this on a podcast the other day, and I sort of brought it up as an idea, as a topic. Like, you know, when you look around the league, do you see a top nine as deep as this team? And to be honest, I haven't looked into it thoroughly, but off the top of my head, they seem to be at least, part of the conversation, because that top line of Matthews, Nylander, and whoever they decide to put there right now, it's Zach Hyman. That's going to hum, especially those two really high-end guys still developing and still sort of finding their chemistry. And then you have Nazem Kadri with Komarov, with Marleau, and then you have a kind of a sneaky, I don't know if you call it a third line, I guess it's second, third line, whatever you want to call it, with Marner JVR and Bozak. So if they're deployed properly, and that's what Mike Babcock has done, and that's why he's paid the big money, if the JVR Marner Bozak line, not exactly known for their defense, if that line is out against maybe the other team's third line, then you can really do some damage throughout the game. And if that fourth line, which could use some work, but you know, Connor Brown as a guy on the fourth line is pretty solid. You know, that's a forward group that does not stop, you know, from puck drops to the end of the game. So I think you'd have to do some thorough research to really figure out who has the best top nine, but the Leafs are right up there.
Well, John, we wanted you to do the research. We're way too lazy to do that research.
John Mattis of Post Media is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John, you had a really interesting piece earlier this week about the Los Angeles Kings. And the Kings, of course, are a team that early on in this decade, you know, were Stanley Cup contenders year in and year out. And they've fallen on a little bit of hard times as of late. Two straight years where they've missed the playoffs. The year before, they exited in the first round very quickly to the San Jose Sharks. Do you think that this LA Kings team is maybe not getting the respect that they deserve in that they were the Corsi Hockey League champions last year and have always been a very good Corsi team, but it hasn't been able to translate into on-ice success? And do you think that has the possibility of changing this year very quickly?
Well, the thing is with the Kings, so they've been this dominant possession team, and I look at analytics, I respect it. But you need to score goals off of these shot attempts, and they haven't been able to do that. And a part of that was Daryl Sutter's system. He's gone. And who's taking over was his old associate coach, John Stevens. So they've been trumpeting throughout the summer since Rob Blake and Stevens took over as the coach and GM. They've been saying, okay, we're turning a page. We're going to have a new system. We're going to play faster. And they've just consistently said that. So you give them the benefit of the doubt, and you go, okay, at least they're realizing what's going on here. They're realizing that just because you outshoot the team night in and night out doesn't mean you're going to win a lot of hockey games. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. They weren't getting high-quality chances. They were just getting a lot of shots from the outside. So, I want to, you know, be behind them. I want to believe in them. But the issue is that Dean Lombardi left their roster in a really tough spot because there's a lot of veterans that are tied up in long-term big money contracts. So they haven't been able to make any moves. Like this summer, their biggest move was picking up Mike Camilleri, which was actually a decent deal for them. They got him on the cheap and he should help, but you know, if that's your biggest name, that's pretty tough. And in the Pacific, you know, there's a big changing of the guard in terms of the Alberta teams really, you know, coming in with his youth and with his talent, and they're sort of taking over that division. So the Kings are being left behind, although I'm not ready to write them off yet, but they have a lot of work to do to sort of turn the tide.
John, it seems like the brass in Toronto is trying to temper enthusiasm in terms of winning now, but it doesn't seem to be the case when you read some of the headlines. I saw one yesterday. It said, Leafs fans, your time is now. Is the time, in fact, now for the Leafs to go deep in the playoffs?
Yeah, well, on that first point, yeah, Lamoriello and Babcock will be out there day in and day out saying, you know, let's chill, guys. Let's relax. Not part of the job, right? But within the city, it's been, you know, it's just the difference from 12 months. You know, if you look back to last October, expectations were super low. People were excited about the kids that were going to play, but no one knew Matthews was this good. People thought Marner would be this good, but, you know, he still had to kind of prove himself. Nylander wasn't really on the radar in the same way that he is now. So people have really, really changed their mind and really pressed fast forward on this team in regards to expectations. And I think it's somewhat warranted. You look at what teams have done in the past with dynasties like the Chicago Blackhawks. They, you know, there's something to be said for winning when your stars are young, because you can surround them with guys like Patrick Marleau, and if they're able to pick up some sort of defensive help at the deadline, like, you sort of have this window, and you can't screw around. You can't go, oh, you know, we have so much time with these young guys. You really don't, because once they get tied up in their long-term contracts, all of a sudden you don't have too much money for everyone else. So I think they're definitely in win-now mode.
And I think the Patrick Marleau signing showed that because, I mean, they paid a guy a lot of money for what he's going to be doing for this team. So I think the team's on board internally. Are they going to tell everyone that? Probably not.
John Mattis covers the NHL for Post Media. John, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll do it again soon. Take care, John. When we come back, we look at our Winnipeg Jets over-under predictions for the 2017-18 season. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.